Are you ready for the weekend yet? We have events, news, and a guest for you to enjoy this Lake Life weekend. Hello, thank you for tuning in to another episode of Lake Life Weekend Podcast. I'm Dirk. We are already in weekend 46 coming up, and we have a very special and interesting interview guest this week, Hans Gilsdorf. He will be speaking about an upcoming project in Detroit Lakes. They want to build an ice palace. So all about the artist Hans Gilsdorf in a little bit and the upcoming project to be on display in February by the pavilion in the end of Washington Street here in Detroit Lakes. A news update, the Minnesota rifle hunt has been successful. There's a very interesting article at the DNR website. So you will find a link on here, lakelifeweekend.com. The DNR expected to see more of an increase in the deer harvest, which they did in zone one. Zone 2 was down 5% and zone down by 20%. So there were over 70,000 deer registered in the state of Minnesota after just the first 2 days of the rifle season, nearly the same amount that was registered after the first 2 days in 2016. Very interesting. Read more about deer harvest and the deer population on the DNR website, a link at lakelifeweekend.com. Events this upcoming weekend, we have at the Holmes Theater, we have the Holmes Art Show starting this Thursday, November 16th, 8 a.m., and it goes through Saturday, November 18th, 5 p.m. It's the 11th annual Holmes Art Show showcasing local artists, including glass, pottery, paintings, jewelry, and much more. Fun event and opportunity to get in some holiday shopping, of course, and get out, explore a little bit what Lakes Country has to offer year-round. The Holmes Theater, a very active place. We spoke to Amy Stearns in the past, and always worth checking out. More details on our website. We have a number of events coming up this weekend. Please, the full schedule on our website. Also, there's concert at the Shooting Star. There's something happening, the Redneck Holly Dazzle here this Saturday in Virgus. Always fun. And we still have yoga in New York Mills and much more. Thank you very much for checking out our website. And also now enjoy, please, our interview with Hans Gilsdorf. Have a great weekend ahead. Yeah, welcome again to Lake Life Weekend 46. I'm here with Hans Gilsdorf, an artist from Detroit Lakes, and we will speak today and learn about the Ice Castle project, I call it just now. I don't know if this is the correct working title, but Hans is nodding to me.
Yes, yeah.
Welcome, Hans.
Hi, thank you, Dirk. It's great to be here.
Yeah, thank you for coming.
Yeah, you were correct with calling it an ice palace. And the reason why that we call it an ice palace is because a castle is generally a place like a fortress for defense. It has the dungeons, has the, you know, a lot of some of the aspects of what that is not so positive, versus an ice palace is a place to celebrate and to festivals and that type of stuff. And that's why it's called an ice palace.
Okay, well, lucky me that I looked at your notes for a second. Before we talk about the ice palace and the project and something new to the area and a highlight for maybe upcoming winter seasons, we hope, let's learn about a little bit about Hans. Who's Hans? Tell us about the artist Hans.
I kind of grew up in Minneapolis, and then back in third grade moved to Phoenix, Arizona. And from there, went to, you know, the elementary school, high school, went to Arizona State University. But the college, the educational environment that I was in wasn't who I was. And so I felt more comfortable actually going out and applying my talents and what I wanted to do through apprenticeships. So I left Arizona State University and started working with professional artists in the motion picture industry as an apprentice.
In California.
In Arizona.
Oh, in
Phoenix, Arizona.
Arizona,
yeah. So originally, I worked under guys who were specialists with scenic painting, doing the sets, doing the backdrops, doing what you'd see for behind the scenes in movies. I mean, like the backdrops, the...
Sure.
Whatever.
It's not always a real house. Sometimes it's painted.
Painted, yeah, or we'd make it look older. We would distress things. We would take brand new cars, make them look old. We would like in the movie Young Guns 2, it was, the original set was from Silverado's, but then we changed it to become Lincoln County, and so it was a matter of then changing those buildings out to look like a different western town that would exist in Albuquerque or in the New Mexico area. And so that's where I learned becoming a jack of all trades. I had a director once tell me, it's like, and I pass this along to a lot of kids that I talk to in the area, that always say yes. And then you take 2 weeks and figure out how you're going to do it. Because if you start saying no or I don't know, then you get passed by for somebody else who does know or is willing to figure it out. And that's been kind of my mantra of just kind of saying, yeah, I'll figure it out. And that was the start of my special effects career. Then from doing sets, I got into special effects sculpting, special effect makeup, slitting throats, creating creatures, worked with Jim Henson, the Muppets, with the Teenage Mutant Turtle movies, doing the turtle suits for Turtles 1 and 2. And like I said, Young Guns 2, I was in the movie Glory. So you start by saying, yes, I'll do this or I'll figure it out. You know, I'd never done stunt fighting. So in the movie Glory, you become a stunt fighter as a Confederate soldier. And after that whole career of about 7 years of doing that, I kind of realized that a lot of friends were starting to get married or my siblings were having kids of their own. So you're missing birthday parties. You're missing celebrations because I was always on the road. You know, I averaged about 130,000 miles a year driving all across the country, working in Arizona, California, New Mexico, Georgia, you name it, you know. And then I came back and you started working at the Phoenix Zoo, and that's where I started doing permanent public installations. And that was for the visually impaired, was based on funding from the Lions Club to help promote the zoo in a way that the visually impaired could experience wildlife like never before. Because like when a person who's visually impaired, you know, they go to a zoo, they can only maybe...
A parrot? A bird?
No. What's that?
A bird? Parrot?
No, a visually impaired. You know, like they can't see.
Oh,
visually
I'm
impaired. No, that's okay.
Visually impaired.
Visually impaired. So instead of saying blind, I mean, because not necessarily are they blind, they just may not have full vision. They may have impaired vision. That when they go to a zoo... You know, obviously they can smell, they can hear an animal, but they don't necessarily know the animal. So they can't reach out and touch a tiger or a lion. They can't go touch, you know. So what we did is this big sculpture project of creating life-size elephants, lions, the animal kingdom was for them to be able to go experience what is an elephant, what is a tiger, what is a lion, what is a orangutan.
Which zoo in Arizona?
And yeah, the Phoenix Zoo.
Phoenix Zoo, and is that very unique? Because I have never heard of that.
Yeah, it's a very unique project in the sense that it was set up for specifically that type of educational
audience.
audience with braille pads and that type of stuff too. You know, and it's used by the whole public. I mean, everybody gets to experience it.
But the
because a lot of people, they didn't get the perspective of standing next to an African elephant, the enormity of what that animal is. And of course, you know, budget constraints, you know, it was created out of concrete and bronze, but they're all anatomically correct to the finest detail.
So one question, though, now, recapping that. You went to art school?
I went to Arizona State University for art.
For art? And then you were, because today you're a full-time artist.
Yep.
But like an artist not limited to photography or not an artist limited to painting, you kind of worked creatively in the movie picture set building industry in a way. And then you kind of developed your trade or skill for sculpturing, your main
like I said, when I had that director tell me, say yes, and then you figure it out. So my specialty prior to all that had been painting and designing. And then you start getting into sculpting. And I had a guy call me up, a studio's call me up in Phoenix. They wanted a life-size King Kong bust. So you can imagine King Kong is 50 feet tall. So they wanted a head and shoulders with a hand for Tokyo, Japan. So he called me up, and of course I said yes. And then I got
No problem.
I'm right on it. And I immediately hung up the phone, and I called up a few people that I knew within the special effect field that I was in that were artists, and I knew one was a welder, one was a hairstylist, one was this one, you know, and you started asking these questions, how do I do this, what do I do, and we had 2.5 weeks to create this whole thing. And so the next day we met at the studios, and we came together and said, okay, you start welding the armature for this, I'm going to start sculpting. And I had never sculpted anything that size, you know, so you figure this, well, it's just a head and a shoulder. So this, actually the head and shoulders is about 14 feet high.
Oh.
You know, if you think about, you know, the stature of a gorilla, so it's just the bust, basically.
Ah.
And then a hand, and there'd be this actress of a Faye Ray doing this thing for this place in Tokyo, Japan. But again, it's that say yes and you figure it out. You know.
You fell into it
and then I started building my skills, my knowledge of becoming a pseudo jack of all trades, a master of few, is an old saying, that you learn painting, you learn sculpting, you learn, and I observe and I ask questions, and I, you know, how do you do that with the fur? How do you weld? So you learn welding, you learn sculpting. And then, so you get to the Phoenix Zoo project, you know, again, I never mixed concrete in my life. I had never, ever. So I called my dad. Dad, what are you doing? He goes, I think it's a 2-to-1 ratio. 2-to-1 what? Sand and cement. Okay. So you start experimenting. 6 months later, I've got a full-size African elephant created to the utmost detail to give the opportunity for the visually impaired and the public to experience a life-size African elephant up front, personal, all the dynamics and anatomy of what an elephant is. And so their takeaway from that is a lot of education purposes that they start to understand their, you know, a good sense of perspective on relationships and size of what an animal is. And then from there, I got hired up to Minneapolis, actually. So my wife, Mary Beth, who's youngest of Norby's from Detroit Lakes, and we lived in Phoenix. We'd always wanted to move back to Minnesota. Our grassroots, our roots, our family history is all from up in this area. And so when we had the opportunity to move to Minneapolis, we jumped on it. And I got hired by a museum supply company to be their headmaster sculptor. And then she was hired by an engineering company in Northfield. So I worked in North Minneapolis. She worked in Northfield. And from there, you know, I was sculpting life-size dinosaurs, sculpting life-size whales, making exhibits for museums, places in the St. Paul Science Museum. And pieces that were all over the country. And again, that the jack of all trades, you started sculpting, you started painting, you started really learning mold making. And it's just by learning and asking and observing others, and that's where I started actually increasing the amount of tools that I would have in my toolbox that I could take to next projects. And from there we moved to Detroit Lakes, and that's where I am now. And so I have my own studio. I have two studios, actually. Interior studio, which is my library, design studio, where I do drafting, modeling, model building, painting, research, and that type of and conceptual art. And then I have an outdoor studio where it's for the actual fabrications of the, you know.
Where you can be dusty and
dusty build. And it's called the fort. Yeah, Mary Beth calls it my fort, where you can build, you can weld. My two daughters have been out there doing projects where they spill paint. That's good. That's fine. I mean, let your creativeness flow. Let, you know, and don't worry about the mess and the spills. Just, it's the end product that comes out of the building.
Is it really outside or is it actually a garage?
It's a steel pole building. It's a separate steel pole building that was originally.
So it has a roof.
It has a roof, has walls, and it was originally a boat storage with dirt floors.
Oh.
And you know, it's kind of like your incredible studio here, where it was something that was very old, and it's repurposed to become something cool and fun. And it's not like my studio; it's not anything fancy. And I love showing it to kids. It doesn't take anything fancy. It's what comes out of it, And that's what is important. It's the soul of the heart. What is inside that building that
stimulates
produces
creativity?
So right. And what goes out of it is what's important. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the outcomes that come from that kind of a place.
So how long have you been in Detroit Lakes? And then what do people know or could know public art? So you have several pieces in our area,
right,
on display. It's not really on display, but it's made
it's
by
there.
You.
It's there. It's there. Public art. Yeah.
Yes. So how long have you been back in Detroit Lakes?
We moved to Minneapolis in 95 and then Detroit Lakes in 99. And so 1999,
okay,
we
almost
moved.
Almost 20 years.
Yep. So time flies. I'm at the age where it's like, wow, winter again. when did that happen? But yeah, when we moved up in 99, the first thing I did is I renovated that outdoor pole barn to become a studio, renovated one of the bedrooms to become an indoor studio. And then from there, you know, moving from, you know, I lived in Phoenix, Arizona. I lived in Burnsville. You know, I worked in Los Angeles, Santa Fe, Wilmington, North Carolina. I mean, you're always in these big cities. This is my first experience. Besides, I mean, I grew up on Pelican Lake, which is about 15 miles south. So I had a concept of small towns, but that was the summers, you know, and you're a child growing up, and that's
vacations,
a great escape. It's vacation. Mm-hmm. It's vacation life. It's lake life. I mean, you can't beat lake life. You can't beat pontooning, boating, skiing, no TV, hanging out with family and friends. But when you move to it, when you're older, you know, we had a two-year-old at the time, my daughter Kendra, and Megan was actually going to be born that summer we moved up. Now you're immersed in a small community, and I wasn't sure what to do. Mary Beth was with her family business, and we're getting ready for, like I said, our second daughter. I'm like, what do I do? You know, and it was all sounding great. Pearl County, moving from big city, now they have a family to a small community where you're, you know, people are going to be watching out for your kids to you know. And at the time, the stores weren't, they had limited hours on Saturdays, they were closed Sundays. And so when so Mary Beth suggested that I sign up with the chamber, the beautification group. Yeah. And so I said, all right. So I joined that group, and We would do things to beautify for the holidays. We talked about different things that we could do within the community. So it got me immersed a little bit more in gravity, you know, gradually even more and more by meeting business people, other similar people, like-minded, that want to do something for the community.
Like public art.
Yeah. And Jolene Schoding, yeah, she had this idea of it'd be great to have this big sculpture down by the lake. And so we started talking about it. Well, how do we fund it? Well, from that, at the time, the cows on parade in Chicago was occurring, where the big fiberglass cows, they were like a neutral white-based fiberglass cow. And then the artists would paint them or decorate them or sculpt to them, type of thing. So I thought that would be a great way to start merging artists with businesses with artists. So I... and at the same point is to raise money for art to become this sailboat sculpture. So what I did then was with a couple other people, Jonathan Danielson and Terry Lynn Nelson, the three of us kind of said, let's do this. And so I sculpted the original fish, made the molds. We had a company in Minneapolis, did the castings. And we
yeah, what was it? You did
it
the
was
fish
a sunfish.
Project.
It was
yeah.
a sunfish. Yeah, the Sunny
all
and DL.
Over,
yeah,
all, like 50 of them.
We did 50. Yeah, you're right. And so each one was going to be a unique piece of artwork. And so, again, it was how do we get artists to meet businesses, business meet artists, which is a nice collaboration and a community get together to introduce people who may never have crossed paths before, now had an opportunity to meet. So the artists would supply us with their designs. Businesses who were sponsoring these fish would then see the design, and then they would then work with the artist on how to get.
When was that?
That was, I knew you'd ask me dates. That would
2000-ish?
Be about 2002. Yeah,
okay.
Somewhere in there.
15 years ago.
Yeah.
And they are out. I see one at the parking lot of Central Market. Then there's one in the mall.
On the corner of Washington and what is it? Home Street or.
Okay.
You know,
yeah.
By the ERA building.
So they are out in the
elements
are out
and about,
on display.
Still. Yeah. And mine, I actually ended up doing two of them. And, you know, and it was all donations, all volunteer time. And the one that I did was for the Becker County Museum. mm-hmm. and it's called Neptune is Wild Right, and that's on permanent display there. And I did another one for Quacko Drug, which is, or the Quacko Building, which is White Drug at the time on Washington Avenue, but that's no longer there. And that fish has now been bought and traded or whatever, and it's now, I think, at the flea market, Shady Hollow.
Oh, yeah.
And the 50 fish still exist. Where they are exactly, we're not fully sure.
Away.
Yeah, they swam away.
But the project was to fund the sculpture
the Sybil, yeah.
by the pavilion.
Yep.
That big
the big steel.
Bronze.
Yeah,
oh,
it's
steel.
Bronze. Yeah, it's actually steel covered in epoxy bronze.
Oh, okay. So that is one of your pieces.
Yep.
That's
yes.
on permanent display. It's a public art. It's the
right.
symbol of the city of Detroit Lakes. We have that sailboat.
The sailboat, yes.
Yeah.
Yep. And
okay.
that was fabricated with Bull Iron Works in Jamestown.
Another
in collaboration.
Recent one that I know of is the big sculpture in front of the library.
Right.
That was
Mary Haney contacted me to do a piece that would commemorate the 100th anniversary of their building and the library. And so meeting with the board, meeting with their steering committee, their groups, over the process of about a half a year to a year almost of conceptual designs, roundtable talking, to find out, you know, and again, a big thing of art too is communication and listening and talking, but mostly listening. And so that's what the premise of this was, is I wanted to create something that would reflect what the library and the community
wanted.
Yeah. And
it's a huge sculpture. It's
it is. It's 14
meters.
14 feet. Yeah. Meters, yeah. 14 feet, which would be meter-wise.
Yeah, it's...
you do the math.
Yeah, it's 6 meters.
His eyeballs are swirling right now.
Yeah.
So it's 14 feet by 8 feet wide and 8 feet high.
Yeah.
And it's 16 and a half tons of concrete.
16 and a half tons.
Tons, yeah.
Now you're going
so
back to
now
kilos.
We're going back, yeah. Yeah, you do them out to the kilos.
No,
so it's
okay.
it's all rebar and sculpted in steel. What I had to do first in order to create this shape was hand bend all this rebar and steel, weld it to be about an inch within the outer dimensions of what the sculpture is. And then we filled it with concrete and then sculpted on top of that. And then it's actually covered with a sculpting epoxy. And the reason for that is in case there's, you know, damage or vandalism or weathering or whatever, it's easy to repair because you can't get new cement necessarily to stick so well to old cement. But this way, I can repair it, touch it up. Because the whole purpose of this was to get kids to fully experience.
Yeah, you missed saying what it is. It's a child laying on its...
Yeah,
back,
yeah,
reading a
yeah,
book or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Let's just describe the piece. Yeah, no, it's a boy or girl. It's non-descriptive. A child, basically laying on their back, propped up on their elbows, with their legs crossed, reading a book.
And you can climb on it, and it's allowed to be experienced.
Correct. It's, yeah, the forearms of this child and the hands are the height of a chair, so they're 16 inches high, and the feet are obviously roughly about 24 inches in where the legs are crossed at the knees. That's a seating area. But
it's all seating. I can
read
outside.
It's all designed for kids to interact and to sit on.
Do they understand? Is people using it?
They do. People
okay.
do. And yet some people, because they've been told so many times, don't touch, don't experience, don't da-da-da-da. That
in the past.
In the past.
And in other
and
situations.
And now it's, I've told people, I said, go sit on that. Go experience it. And these kids, they just their eyes lighten up to experience something. And the favorite place for people to sit is with their back in the book, with their legs going up to the chin of this child. It's kind of sitting there reading, which is kind of fun to watch them reading when the child,
yeah,
the sculpture
yeah,
itself
yeah.
is reading.
Yeah.
But that's what this whole piece was about, and that's what the library group really conveyed to me as it was a process of communicating and designing and coming up with it, and again. Originally we wanted it to be bronze, but the cost of that was so exorbitant. I mean, it was beyond reasonable fundraising. So I said, let me rethink this. And drawing back in my past, you know, of the elephant sculpture, it's like I could create this out of concrete for much more economically.
Yeah.
And so that's what we ended up doing. And so it's a fun piece. Every time I drive by, I see people interacting with it.
So now we learned steel, bronze, cement, concrete, but we are arriving at the ice sculpture. We learned that you're heavily involved in public art, and of course, it just makes sense that you're building an ice sculpture or an ice palace. And how did that come apart? Like, did you just, like me, wake up one morning and had that brilliant idea, or like, how did that happen?
Yeah, no, it, you know, again, it's this culmination of, like you said, you know, I do it professionally. This is what I do every day. I get up 8 a.m. and I work in the studio till 6 p.m. every day. Well, not weekends necessarily, but you know, and it's just this career building up on all these different materials and all this stuff. And you think you know everything. You know, I designed children's hospitals for 15 years in Fargo.
Another project.
And Bismarck, and Detroit Lakes to create environments for kids, for children and younger patients not to feel like they're in a hospital setting, you know, to create we called it a distraction program. So they didn't necessarily feel that they were in a hospital. So like Fargo was the Renaissance Village. Every child had their own house and mailbox and da-da-da they could go into. Bismarck was Peter Pan theme with the nurse stations as a pirate ship, and Wendy's bedroom was the playroom and a lost boy tree. And so so again, with all those, like you're saying, it's different epoxies, sculpting, materials, things that have to conform to fire rating, safety, all this stuff. So you get this culmination of all this stuff comes together, and you think you're kind of on this path, you know. And like I said, you know, you always say yes. And so back in February, Amy Stearns at the Holmes Theater said, "Hey, I got this idea that we've been called upon by St. Paul to do this ice harvest. Would you want to build an ice palace?" Sure, you know.
And, why not?
and from that point was the birth of the IOC, the Ignorant Optimist Club, because we really, at that time, it was we formed a steering committee with a bunch of locals, Scott Walls and Amy Stearns are the head of this whole thing, and so I joined on board right away, you know, and thinking it's those blocks of ice, you know, you buy at the grocery store. You know, I'm like, we can stack those. They're just, 10-inch by 10-inch blocks of ice? No problem. Well, you know, through this, and the original project was to supply ice, 24,000 to 30,000 blocks of ice for St. Paul for their ice palace. They were going to build a world record palace, and it was an awesome group of people down there. And again, it was all volunteerism. This great Minnesota get-together. We're going to harvest ice up in Detroit Lakes, bring it to St. Paul. They're going to build this big ice.
We were approached, the city of Detroit Lakes, to provide ice cut out of Big Detroit.
Little Detroit. Yeah, by the
and,
pavilion.
And,
yeah.
And then, so we provide ice, and they cut it out, and then...
Yeah, we were looking at logistics of cutting that many blocks of ice, and they're 22 by 44 inches by 12 inches, weighing roughly 350, 400 pounds each. You know, that's each block of ice weighing that amount of weight. And then how to get them onto pallets, onto semi-trucks, and then it'd be about 240 semi-loads to St. Paul.
240 semi-loads.
That's what we were looking at. And so we were looking at conveyor belt systems and how to get it from the lake up onto semi-trucks into different parks, and working with the city. The city's been awesome with helping us to try to figure this out, and everybody's known the value of what this was, and the whole point also for us was to get Detroit Lakes on the national map. And this was in conjunction with St. Paul building it with the Super Bowl that was going to be hosted in Minneapolis in 2018. So it was really this huge conglomeration of putting minds together, efforts together, materials, volunteerism, and the whole premise was just to build something.
And skills.
And
cut it out.
Right, and to build something that's so incredibly unique, and to show that we are fun-loving people who embrace winter. We embrace all the seasons up here. And that's originally...
They live year-round.
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly what it came from back in the 1880s. Was a guy from the east came out and saw people in St. Paul as part of the railroad industry trying to expand the whole concept of industrialization out here. Kind of said, "You guys are a bunch of insane people living in here in a frozen tundra." Well, the people of St. Paul took it personally and said, we're going to build a palace. In 1886, I believe, they built this huge palace
of ice.
And then the population boomed, and people said, these are creative, fun-loving, outdoor, all season loving people. So
But St. Paul now no longer wants to build this ice palace.
They unfortunately, because like I said, these people down there, their hearts are all in the right spot. They were awesome. They've been extremely helpful to all of us to help guide us, to give us, especially me, trying to figure out how to build our own ice palace. They've been very informative, very, you know, call anytime. And it was very unfortunate their funding didn't come through. So they had to back out. They're still going to build a smaller palace. That's not 30,000 blocks ice, but roughly 4,000 to 5,000 blocks ice, and it's going to be I believe, still in Rice Park, where they've traditionally had their festival downtown St. Paul. But you know, for about 10 seconds, we were kind of like, oh, what do we do? And we like, we're still, again, ignorant optimist club. We're still going to do it. And so
we're going to have our ice palace as planned.
We are going to have it as planned. And so I designed it. The dimensions of the thing are roughly about close to 60 feet long, about 25 feet deep, and then 24 feet high. So it's so
20 meters by 6 meters.
There you go. God, you are good with the math. You're now volunteering to count how many blocks of ice I need for this palace.
It's going to be large. That's what I mean.
Yeah, it's huge. So there's a center tower that goes way up, and then an outer square, and then there's two side wings. And then in the front is a big throne, and then there's like a bench all the way around it. And so now, because now we're just doing our own, and we were going to have like an ice harvest festival as part, because we were supposed to start December 15th with St. Paul in order to get their ice to allow them to have the time to build their big palace. Well, now that's not necessarily the case. So projects like this are very fluid. You have to bend, you have to stretch, you have to be creative on how we're going to do it. So we were going to be doing it in People's Park in the volleyball courts. We're trying to find the most minimal damaging kind of area if you you don't want to do it in a ballpark and damage
the
infield.
So that's behind, that's by the...
It's by the skating rinks.
Yes, yes.
So. And so, but now, talking with the ice cutting guys they said, well, you can just build it on the beach. Well, so we were also planning on having the Becker County Museum, because Detroit Lakes used to be a huge ice harvest area on Detroit Lake. They used to harvest about 18 acres every year of ice for the railroad industry. That would be for refrigeration. So they would store it on us, and they would then be able to bring refrigerated foods all over the country, and a big supplier was Detroit Lakes.
Huh.
And so... There, we still have a bunch of these men that used to do it, are still alive today. Yeah, and so it's been very interesting. I have yet to meet them, but because of that, Becky Mitchell at the Becker County Museum, they want to have an exhibit there while we're harvesting.
Oh,
so coming up on January 11th and 12th is when We Cut is coming up to cut the ice. So we're gonna do an ice harvest there. So we're gonna be harvesting about 1,600 blocks of ice. It's about an acre and a half of ice, and if anybody's curious to know the facts, and they say, you know, we're taking water out of our lake, is that depleting the amount of water we have in our lake? Well, we had engineers, Scott Walls had a engineers.
Yes, of course it is, but it will come back.
To look up the statistics and what is, if you took a foot of ice out of even 5 acres, what we were originally planning.
How many liters are missing?
Actually, we lose more water by evaporation on a single day in the summer.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, than you would in this whole ice
surface.
The whole surface is evaporating.
Yes, of course.
More ice than what we would have harvested. But now we're only doing just over about an acre. And it's really not that much ice and water. So, and now building it, because I said like we're fluid, now we're deciding to build it out in front of the pavilion, because the Becker County Museum wants to do an exhibit in the pavilion on ice harvest past, present, and so now we're going to harvest right out in front of the pavilion, which is straight on the south side of Washington Avenue, is to build the palace there. The beach is flat enough, and then so when the ice melts and all that,
just wash back,
goes right back into the lake.
Yeah,
so we're really not losing anything.
No.
You know, and a lot of the events that, you know, we're going to harvest on January 11th and 12th. And then we start the construction of the ice palace. So, you know, anybody can come down and watch us and see what we're doing as we're figuring it out on
a
daily basis.
How do you cut it? Like a motor saw?
Yeah, they have, I haven't seen the equipment exactly. I've seen photographs, but it's like a two-wheeled, big motorized handled thing that has a huge blade in the front, like a big saw blade. And they cut these lines, and then they score every 44 inches and then float these big, big strips of ice, and then they break them into this into their 44 inch lengths, and then they get on a crib conveyor belt system that takes them from the water up to a ramp, and then that's where we get them and put them on pallets. And
16,000 little bricks.
1,600. So 1,600.
Oh, 1,600.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, still. And each one will weigh, if the ice is roughly, I think I've been told that if the ice is like 12 inches thick,
12 inch or 4.
They're about 400 pounds each. But now, because we're Allison having early freeze up right now for some reason, which is fun, that if we're now harvesting later, we might be looking at thicker ice.
Of course.
The ice is still going to be making ice. You know, I mean, the lake is still freezing up. So we may be looking at thicker ice blocks, which then means recalculating how many blocks I need. Because the palace I've designed is based on 12-inch thick blocks. But if also another 20-inch thick or they're 30-inch, you know, we need fewer. But
So the ice sculpture, though, is... Yeah. And I see a drawing. I'll take a picture later. But it's going to be illuminated, but it's not accessible. So I cannot go in because of...
Liability, and
there's benches all around, so I can use it. It's a kind of becoming a furniture in a way, no?
Yes, and that's a good thing you brought that up because we have, again, it's a huge gathering of people that are going to volunteer and donate to make this thing happen. We are fundraising to raise around $40,000, I think, maybe more. And that's, but we're also, with that, we're doing lights down Westlake Drive that'll be permanent. That are sailboats to be up year round, and then it's for those hard costs. I'm volunteering all my time on this
and donating,
and I'm volunteering, and all the guys that are building it are doing the same thing. The money that we're raising is for the hard costs, for the lights that we will then again use for further projects like this in the future, so they'll be reusable. But then it's for those hard costs. I don't want anybody to have to spend money to do, because when you get these cranes and these skid steers and the backhoes and all these heavy equipment that we need out there, they have to have oil changes and fuel. We have to have fuel for heating to keep our equipment from thawing out, you know, from freezing. So we have to thaw them out, all the chainsaws, all the equipment, not only to mention heating the area for workers, you know, to go to a trailer to warm up. Because we may be looking at sub-zero temperatures to build this thing that, you know, you can only be outside for so long. And we're working with ice in ice, you know. So those are hard costs. So we are fundraising for that. And that's, again, these companies already donate to, you know, they're great with philanthropy to help other organizations that they've already scheduled for. So I don't want them to have to spend out more money to do what this is. So that's why we're trying to fundraise. To reimburse them for those costs, those hard costs that I don't want them to incur, because they're donating their time, their equipment. That's a huge gift, and we're all doing it to celebrate Detroit Lakes, to celebrate winter, to celebrate and to do something so unique of why we live up here, and it's something to bring people to Detroit Lakes to highlight our community, and so. Like I said, we're harvesting on January 11th and 12th, so we encourage the public come down to check it out, to see it. But then we're going to start building the Ice Palace, and the goal is to have it open by February 8th, which is the start of the Polar Fest. And then it'll be up and running through...
February 8th?
February 8th, yep. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then it'll be running through the 19th. And that night, it's going to be lit up. We have this awesome guy, Mike Schmidt, here in Perm. So it's not just Detroit Lakes. We got Mike Schmidt from Perm, he's coming out. He's going to light it for us. So he's going to light this whole thing up. So at night, it's going to change colors. It's going to be this really cool effect, this great place. And there's going to be ice thrown out front for photo ops. I have Mark Rasmussen out in Lake Park, who's made the ice tongs. He's taken these massive steel logging tongs and modifying to be ice tongs based on the help that we got from St. Paul on how they build their ice pals. So it's we got
ice tongs.
Well, they're logging tongs. If you think of like the old days of the old two-handed ice tongs, well, these have to be held by a huge cable on a crane or a backhoe, and to lift.
Like
and
hand.
So it's basically a compression. So you have a ring, and it's the force of the lift compresses it into the block of ice. Mm-hmm. But a logging tong has the single tines in the middle, so they'll break these big blocks of ice in half. So we had to put horizontal cross supports with three tines on each side, so you have a total of six tines hitting this ice block.
Yeah.
You know, because you don't want to have a 400 to 700 pound block of ice go up in the air and split in two, you know, and come down on anybody below.
Yeah.
So, like I said, we're learning.
It's quite a process.
We're learning as we go, and we're figuring out as we go, and we're doing everything possible to get the right people in play, to have the right players to come together to make this thing happen.
So do you still need volunteers?
Yeah, we're looking for volunteers. We're looking for anybody with talent, guys that are women that, that can work with equipment, that want to be a part of that, know bricklaying. And, you know, and that's kind of a weird thing because we keep saying, well, bricklayers are the guys that work with big blocks. I think stone or concrete is way different than ice. No, but as long as you're comfortable trying to figure this type of stuff out and height, yeah, we're looking for help to do this. And not only that, we're looking at some volunteers that'll help with traffic or helping out explain things while we build. That can be there so we're not being interrupted while we're building.
Sure.
And the general public's asking questions, that there are people that
can
help.
Should be fenced off.
Yeah.
It's also a work zone now.
Yeah, it'll be fenced off, but, you know, people just want to ask questions. They want to know. They want to learn, you know, and so
you should have the exhibit open earlier.
Well, they're going to have the exhibit open early, and then I don't know how long that's going to be running, but it'll be open during the Polar Fest, which is already this long-standing event we have up here to celebrate winter.
Yeah.
So we have the Polar Plunge will be right now in the front of this. And all these different events that are happening throughout the whole week that, you know, is the two weekends and a fireworks show that ends the whole thing on the second weekend. And also with the palace is kind of this. We don't want it just to be a standalone palace, so we're getting kind of crazy and kind of fun with it. Of we want to create family room furniture, living room furniture in front of it. So maybe a sofa, a couple love seats, a couple chairs.
Out of ice.
Yeah. So we're going to take these blocks of ice, and now we're going to create more seating area. So it becomes an event in its own self. If you want to go experience to sit on ice and experience this big wonderland of ice, it came literally 100 feet away.
Yeah.
And
maybe
then,
in the future, isn't there like ice sculpture contests and
yeah,
stuff?
And that's
maybe
what,
that
that's,
can grow like down the road.
Right. And you just tagged on something. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I should have not said
No, that's great. That you know, you forget kind of where you're going with this, but part of that also is we want to bring in snow sculptors or ice sculpting. So we're looking into that to get to maybe get some professionals to come in to help and then work with the high school kids or kids to teach them how to do some of these things. So themselves then can go experience
and
learn and enjoy winter for all it's worth. And so we're trying to make this not just a ta-da, we built an ice palace, which would be a miracle in itself on my from my perspective.
But then
to get the community and then get more people to come down and really enjoy it.
Yeah.
And that's the whole point of what this is all about. And again, it's all volunteer. I'm not getting paid for this. Nobody's getting paid for this. And it's just this, we do it because
for the people, by the people.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, I think it's a beautiful story, and I'm glad I learned about it a little while back, and I thought we definitely need to communicate that, and maybe we reach one or the other that is able to support physically or monetarily.
Right.
Because I think, are you halfway through your fundraising? Or I know he is always about fundraising.
We're about a third of the way there, and we're reaching out. We do have sponsorship opportunities at different levels that you can contact the chamber or, let's see, I'm trying to think here. We do have a website, www.iceharvestdl.com, or you can just go into the chamber as well. But there's opportunities for that. So, I mean, if you can't physically help out, but you monetarily want to help out, we would love that. And again, the money is going towards lights for the palace, but then also permanent lights for Westlake Drive to go on the light poles to be up year-round. And they're a fantastic design with the sailboat, it's just a great feeling of just bringing everybody together to celebrate winter. We're very excited for it, and we've all been working on this since February. We've been meeting once or twice, three times a week. We've gone down to St. Paul to go to the state capitol, meet in the Senate hearing room to discuss this with the St. Paul engineers, the St. Paul team down there, And again, you know, it's unfortunate that their end of it fell through, because we were having a great time with those people, and they're a fun-loving bunch. And in fact, they have a royal family, the King Boreas and his royal family, with the and the Vulcans, with King Vulcanus and those guys that are their
imaginary royal.
They're imaginary, but they are actual people who go around and participate with their ice palace and their winter carnival. But they also travel around the state and sometimes around the nation, actually, to this feel-good ambassadorships that are just a fun-loving group of people. And they came up to the Water Carnival, and we built a parade float for them, and they participated. And we got to know these people, and they are just a hoot, and they're just all in on whatever they do.
Well, I'm sure they're coming when the project is completed. And
well, we hope to invite them back up. Shoot. Yeah, we'd like to invite them back up. You know, so if it's something that nobody knows about, the Ice Carnival, the St. Paul, their royal family, look them up. It's a great organization, and it's a great group of people. And because of that, I said, well, you can't have your own king, you know, your own ice king. We have to have our own, too. You know, and the premise that was also inspirational for me is they build their ice palace to bring back the spirit of winter, the ice palace, and for the spirit that they have, this King Boreas. So I said, well, we need to have our own. So I created King Isbit, and we're going to be doing some unveiling with him coming up soon. And he's our king for all. He's a representative for all reasons, for all seasons. And so on him, he carries all the iconic images of all the festivals that we have throughout the year in Detroit Lakes. And so his name is King Isbit, which is Scandinavian for ice cube.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's a quirky thing, but I also wanted to create a character that would reflect that this ice palace is a family event. It's to let kids come out and adults come out and seniors come out and everybody come out and just kind of feel good about why we live where we live is in the lakes area.
Yeah, no, I think it's a beautiful addition to survive the winter, let's say. And
right.
Since it has been arrived early and we are already freezing and not really happy, I think that's maybe a highlight to really look forward to and maybe even get engaged in, or maybe in the future if it becomes an annual thing. So thank you.
Right.
Thank you really for sharing the story. And you can go on iceharvestdl.com to learn more.
Yep.
Or you go contact Carrie at the Chamber, I suppose, and for questions or support.
Right. And this is going to be a part of Polar Fest. So it's just one event of many events that's happening at Polar Fest. So Polar Fest is, you know, 2 weekends long. It's the full week. I mean, as events going through, it's kind of like a winter version of Water Carnival.
Yeah.
So they have their own committee, and these guys have been great to welcome us into their folds of the celebration of the winter. And so we're working now in conjunction with them, which now makes it a lot more fun than two separate things. It's very fitting that we have Polar Fest and an ice palace, and it just makes a whole event more fun for the entire family and people all around to come to Detroit Lakes to see why we live here and why we do the dumb things that we do, and that's the Ignorant Optimist Club.
Yeah, lake life year round. I love it.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, thank you very much for coming and sharing the story.
Oh, sure thing.
And I think we will follow up at least with images when the time comes around, and and share more about it when the event is available to touch and feel. And
yeah,
experience.
Everything right now is just on paper, and then eventually, hopefully, it's all on ice.
Yeah, all on ice. Thanks again.
Thank you, Dirk. Yeah, this is awesome.
Yeah, have a good weekend.
Yes, you too.
Yeah, this was already our newest episode of the Lake Life Weekend podcast. We sure hope you enjoyed it. Tune in again next week with another great guest and updates. Always check out our website, lakelifeweekend.com, and if you have some comments, please feel free to email us at hello@lakelifeweekend.com, and you have a wonderful weekend ahead.